So we're coming to the end of our retreat. Can you hear me? Is the audio okay? Great, thank you. I'm coming to the end of our retreat. Perhaps because you've been practicing at home in your own environments, maybe there'll be a little bit of infusing your home with memories of mindfulness, memories of retreat practice in your home. And those memories may support maybe a slightly different transition back from retreat into our non-retreat practice. I talked to somebody who sat the last retreat I taught in this form. It was a couple of weeks after the retreat, I think, and I asked him how the transition was, and he said that there was more strength of mindfulness that continued following the retreat. Partly because of what I just said, that, you know, essentially you are in your environments creating memories of being pretty present. And so that may support you. And yet, it won't be as strong as it is. Given the form, given the context, given the support that you have here, the community gathering together a couple times a day, reflection on Dharma in the larger group and in the smaller groups, those things really support the continuity and the momentum of mindfulness. And so in shifting back into our non-retreat lives, can't really say our usual lives, there's nothing usual about this time. And who knows whether they'll ever be the same usual again. Things may be changed for quite a long time. But in shifting to our non-retreat practice, to our off-retreat practice, we thought of a little bit of reflection on clear comprehension of suitability might be useful, this fourth kind of clear comprehension. This morning in the guided meditation, Gil talked about the context of formal meditation and the choices that can be made there because of the context. The choice he mentioned this morning was the choice to respond with awareness, just be responsive. The contrast of responsible and the identities that can come with that sense of responsibility. And that in the practice, especially in the formal practice, there can be a letting go, a setting down of that sense of needing to do something. And exploring the possibility of responding with awareness. But this is really a practice of exploring what's suitable for the context. This is a teaching, essentially, on suitability. A practice of suitability. What, given the context, what is suitable for the cultivation of our hearts and minds? another way we could look at this is, given our situation, what are skillful means that will support the mind to be present? What are skillful means that will support the cultivation of the mind moving towards the skillful and away from the unskillful? What is suitable given our current situation, the context that we're in, our current mental state, our skills, our strengths? What's suitable for the purpose of freedom? And so the clear comprehension of suitability, in my way of understanding it, there's a connection to the clear comprehension of purpose, because it is what is suitable given a Dharma purpose or a Dharma context. Now, there's different contexts of practice. I've named some of them, different contexts of our hearts and minds. There's a different context of formal meditation practice on retreat and formal meditation practice off retreat. There may be different activities, different meditation practices that are suitable in those different contexts. There's practice on and off retreat, and the off retreat context is part of what I'd like to explore today in this reflection. There's the context of the state of our mind, more or less settled, and different practices or skillful means that might be suitable given the mind is more or less settled. There's conditions in our lives. What has happened to us? What we need to do? These things, these activities, the things, the responsibilities, we could bring that word back in. We have responsibilities in our daily life, and to not set aside the Dharma just because we have responsibilities, but exploring what's suitable in those responsibilities and bringing the Dharma in connection with those responsibilities. And there's the strengths and capacities of our own mind that we all are different. All of our minds are different, and what's suitable for one person might or might not be suitable for another. What's suitable for one person at one time might or might not be suitable for that same person another day or another hour. So we've been exploring this suitability essentially in the ways we've been talking about practice. You know, what's suitable on retreat, it affects the type of practice we're engaged in. Largely on this retreat, we've been encouraging or exploring the possibility of the suitability of mindfulness in all circumstances. And yet for some of us, the capacity to open to experience with mindfulness may take some concentration practice, some settling the mind before opening. So that would be suitable, perhaps, for some. For others, the practice of settling the mind in concentration may be more natural, following some open, receptive practice to allow the mind to relax and be receptive before exploring receiving a particular meditation object like the breath. So all minds are very different, and our retreat practice is going to be affected by that, what's suitable for each of us. So in retreat practice, the suitability may this, the clear comprehension of suitability may affect the kind of meditation practice you engage in, the kind of tools that you engage with if there's a difficulty or a struggle in the mind, whether you choose metta, for instance, or choose to perhaps take a walk if there's a struggle happening. Just different, so many different skillful means. We talk about this all the time. We just don't usually give it this name of clear comprehension of suitability. This is really, in some ways, the art of the practice, learning what works. Learning what works for us in a given situation, a given context, and understanding, having some discernment about what the context of our minds is, so that we don't just try to apply some, rule book. It's more of an art form. So really, I think of this aspect of clear comprehension as being the art of the practice in some ways. And then in daily life, too, this is a huge context shift to leave retreat and go back to daily life. And in this situation, we don't have the context shift of the environment in which we've been practicing, and that may be a beautiful gift. I'm really curious to hear how it goes for each of you, that integration or that shift out of retreat at home to non-retreat at home. We're learning, we're all learning what this is like. And, I've been through the shift out of residential retreat, various forms of that. I've done so many of those that I can tell you what to expect. I can't really tell you what to expect here. I've not done this. I've only taught it. I've done self-retreat at home, and there's perhaps some similarities there. And I did find, in a way, like the retreat, a self-retreat at home. I did, the longest one I did was, 6 weeks. I think I did a 6-week self-retreat at home. And it felt like my house had been blessed. It felt like there was a kind of a sacredness that came into the house. And it changed my relationship with being at home. And so, there is this... I'm just really curious what happens. What is this context shift like? I don't exactly know what this context shift is like, so we'll all be learning that together. But I'm fairly sure that there will be a shift, that there will be some different suitable means for you, or an exploration at least of what is this different context and what might be suitable in terms of practice, bringing mindfulness into daily life, that this is suitable to bring mindfulness into daily life. Now here I'm not talking so much about the formal sitting practice, but more the engagement with becoming aware in all of our activities. And that is suitable, that exploration of how to bring mindfulness into everything that we're doing. I love this question. Shantideva, an 8th century Buddhist scholar, offered the question to us that is a great question for whatever is happening in our lives. How can the practice of mindfulness be done under these very circumstances? It doesn't matter what the circumstances are, actually. It might be the very circumstances of sitting meditation, but it might be the very circumstances of being in the grocery store, or the very circumstances of taking a walk through the neighborhood, or the very circumstances of preparing your meal. This is, in a way, what we've been encouraging and cultivating in the daily activities on the retreat. But it's likely that the momentum will be not quite as strong in the coming weeks. And so there may be some different explorations or different ways to explore the practice. And I'm just going to offer a few things that have supported me in terms of opening to cultivating the practice of mindfulness, whatever is happening, wherever I am, whatever I'm doing. And the first skillful means or suitable tool that I found useful is a really light touch of practice. That I think earlier in my meditation, when I was practicing early on in my meditation, I really was trying very hard to be mindful. Just kind of like picking up the mindfulness. I'm going to be mindful. And actually, very early in the first time I met mindfulness at all, I thought that I'd read a book about mindfulness. It was Thich Nhat Hanh's The Miracle of Mindfulness. And I read the book at night, and I thought, wow, this sounds like a great idea. I'll do this tomorrow. And the next time I remembered it was when I picked up the book the next night when it was sitting next to my bed. And after three or four nights of that, I basically said, well, I guess I can't do this. And I put it down. Because I had the idea that what he was talking about meant that I had to be mindful all day long, not that I needed to kind of be encouraging just light touch or moments of recognition. The next time I met mindfulness, fortunately, I was in a better place to receive it and that I was really suffering. I was more available to hear something that would support. It's kind of like, well, does anybody know a way to deal with this suffering? The same question the Buddha says people ask. And I received a book that encouraged mindfulness again, and it's like, okay, well, I don't know how this is going to work, but I'll give it a try. And yet in this book, something about this book, which was Everyday Zen by Joko Beck, gave me the idea of not trying to be mindful all day long, but just picking a couple of things, some projects, just trying to find a couple of things to be mindful of. And, and in the choosing of those things, one of them I picked was anger. Then, I didn't even have a lot of skills or tools about noticing it. Didn't have the tools of pay attention to the body. But what I had heard from this book was just notice when this thing happens. And don't act on it, just be with it. That was the instruction that I had. And that's what I did with the anger. It's like when I noticed it, it's like, oh wow, this is anger, and boy, it sure hurts. It doesn't feel very good. I don't know what to do with this. I guess I go on with my day. I guess I go back to work. And that kind of lightness of just receiving an experience, and not like then trying to pick up the mindfulness like a backpack and carry it around with me all day, but just like it arose, it met something in that moment, and a very light touch of meeting it. This has been really supportive for me. Recognizing the moment that mindfulness arises. Just recognizing that moment. That happens a lot in our day, that returning of becoming aware, that moment is a very light moment in and of itself. because you didn't have to do it. It just happened. If we can recognize that it happened, kind of like we get a little gift of mindfulness in our daily lives in that moment. And maybe it'll last for a certain length of time. But what I sometimes say when I'm teaching daily life practice, daily life retreats, is that when that mindfulness arises, just like kind of ride it, be aware, like you ride the scooter, you know, it's kind of like it's got some momentum, you're aware that your awareness has come up. But don't necessarily try to hold on to it and kind of keep it churning. Because in daily life, we do have other things that we're doing. And this is part of the suitability. That there may be activities that we're engaged in. You know, when I was a computer programmer, for instance, it wasn't suitable for me to try to carry the mindfulness moment to moment along in that activity because it would have been a challenge to maintain the concentration of what I needed to hold in the mind to do the computer programming. That is that there. One thing I want to say though about that is not that it's not possible to be mindful in that place, because I did discover at times that the mindfulness can arise in the midst of a very intense activity. And if we're kind of attuned to the moment of mindfulness returning, we might then become aware of, oh, this is how what it's like to be mindful in that place of whatever it is. And in my case, of being in the midst of holding this like massive structure in my mind. Kind of like I could see how the mind was holding the whole of the program and knew where things were. But the only way I could see that was by not trying to do it. It just arose. It just happened. So the light touch in daily life, just noticing the moment when mindfulness returns, a kind of when there are times that it can be suitable to in our day, and this is again kind of looking at in our activities in our day, there can be many, many more than we might think. Many activities that are suitable for kind of making that tapping of the scooter, encouraging mindfulness. You know, the activities of our normal chores of making our bed in the morning, of getting dressed, taking a shower, brushing our teeth, all of those things. You know, we don't really have to be thinking about other things in that time, and we can just be with it. We can be with those activities. So there are times of the day where it is suitable to cultivate that momentum, cultivate that moment-to-moment awareness. In the cultivating the moment-to-moment awareness in daily life, a couple of things that, again, I found interesting and useful is really to be really receptive. We've been exploring that receptive kind of practice on the retreat. And what I'd say is that in the context of meditation, in the context of formal meditation, often what is received may be at a particular level of experience. You know, when we've been sitting for 8 days, the experience of sitting meditation has a particular context there, and what the mind attunes to, what it receives, may be very clear and precise seeing of sight leading to thought, leading to a mood or an emotion, and watching that condition on those conditions unfolding. That might be what's happening in the sitting, that there's a kind of a very clear kind of unfolding. And it's not to say that that can't happen in daily life, but often I'd say that the what's received in daily life is maybe at a different level. Maybe it's more ordinary. Maybe you're just receiving as you're having breakfast that you're sitting in the room with your family and eating, or maybe you're receiving the sense of the day as you see it looking out the window. It may be at a very ordinary level what's received, and to honor the level of mindfulness that's available in that moment, rather than having the idea that mindfulness means having a particular kind of awareness. So this happened for me, again, in my practice. I kind of had the idea that being mindful meant that I was aiming my mind at particular types of experience. So when I sat down to eat, it meant I was aware of the lifting of this was following all the Mahasi training that I did, the lifting of the spoon, the scooping of the food, the raising of the spoon to my mouth, the opening of the mouth, the tasting of the food in the mouth, the chewing. I thought that's what mindfulness meant while eating. And that's one way that mindfulness can be while eating. But there are other things that can be going on. Like you might, while you're eating, be kind of rested. The mind may just be resting. And that may be what's most obvious. Or the mind may be planning what it needs to do the rest of the day. And that may be appropriate to receive. The mind thinking about the day and being aware of how I am as I reflect on the various things that I need to do. So there's many different levels that we can be mindful, and part of the art of cultivating the mindfulness in daily life is exploring the suitability. Again, the question, what does it mean to be mindful in these very circumstances? Not some idea about what it should look like, but given these conditions, given what the mind is receiving, what is that? What is that? So that's one piece, is to really kind of settle back to that very receptive mode, and to not expect or look for anything in particular. Another thing I've seen in the daily life exploration is that sometimes I can know that I'm aware, and it may just be that simple, just knowing that I'm aware. And I don't necessarily, there's not necessarily a clarity about the moment to moment what the mindfulness is aware of. But there's a kind of a sense of a continuity of, yeah, I know that I'm aware in this context. So it's a much broader kind of awareness. And in that maybe more broad recognition of, yeah, I'm aware, I have found it interesting to kind of check into, how's the heart? Is it at ease, or is it tense or agitated in some way? Just a very simple kind of check-in. Is the heart kind of open or contracted? So knowing that I'm aware, maybe not so much knowing exactly what the mind is knowing moment to moment, that kind of real precise awareness that we can cultivate on retreat, but just knowing that I'm aware, and then how's the heart? At ease or constricted? What I've seen in that exploration sometimes is maybe I notice that there's a constriction. And in the becoming aware of that, I'm just holding it. Oh yeah, there's a constriction here. The becoming aware of that sometimes can then reveal what it is that the heart is constricted about. I've seen this happen. It's kind of surprising sometimes that You know, we think, yeah, we're just aware. It's not particularly much we think is going on. But then checking in to how the heart is, we may feel this constriction. And then that begins to, that may reveal what is, where the rub is. It may reveal that there's some, like, unpleasant experience in the body that was so subtle it hadn't quite been, you know, bubbled into the level of what's obvious or what's being received. So these are just a few kind of things I found useful in terms of practicing mindfulness in these very circumstances in daily life. Keeping it simple, recognizing the moment when awareness returns, finding certain times of the day, perhaps, where there can be a cultivation when it is suitable to try to explore more moment-to-moment the practice of mindfulness. And then just connecting with awareness and not necessarily having the agenda to know the details of what we know. And how's the heart? How's the heart? I'm aware. How's the heart? Well, there's an exploration around suitability that's maybe even a little broader than practicing mindfulness moment to moment or just cultivating mindfulness in daily life. And this may be, in, it's kind of, I see this aspect of suitability as connected with the teaching on clear comprehension of purpose. Because if there's a connection with what our inspiration is, what our aspiration is, our aim towards the practice, towards connecting with the Dharma. In the first days of the retreat, Gil talked about clear comprehension of purpose and what is the purpose and what is the inspiration or aspiration of our hearts. And in particular, in connection with our relationship to the Dharma. Perhaps it's a connection to freedom from suffering and struggle, or perhaps it's a connection with the Brahma-Viharas, compassion and care and kindness. Whatever your connection with your inspiration or aspiration, there can be a way that we explore our activities in connection with that purpose. And so one way perhaps to look at suitability is how can we explore our actions, our everyday actions, as being in alignment with the Dharma. So, for example, going to the grocery store to buy food, a obvious intention or purpose there is to provide nourishment, sustenance for ourselves, for our families. It's something that we need to do for ourselves. We might engage in that activity. And that is a wholesome, there's wholesomeness about nourishing ourselves and nourishing our families. There's a connection of that to metta. But we may not remember that connection as we go to do that activity. A way to kind of bring our Dharma intention into our everyday activities is to remember that intention. Remember the that even these ordinary everyday activities can support those intentions. So if there's an intention towards the Brahmaviharas, towards the connection, towards care, towards love, towards compassion, the simple activity of going to the store is very in alignment with that. And yet it's more the intention towards that care is nourished when we're consciously aware of it, when we kind of connect to it. And so that's one way to bring that intention into that simple activity. And you might then reflect on other ways, like consciously connecting to being kind to other people in the store. You know, that this is a part of my doing this activity, is to not just do it with my eyes down and just going around doing my thing, but taking care with the other people in the store. Giving them especially now, giving them room, not rushing them. It's complicated buying things these days, I've seen, and I find myself like really looking for the things. The things I usually buy are not easily there, so I need to find something else. I see other people doing the same thing, and you know, they stand there for a while, unaware that I'm there, and they stand there for a while. And I just try to hold that with some patience and some compassion. Like, okay, yes, I know that space of looking for my things and not finding them. You know, just bringing that attitude of care, of concern, of compassion. Orienting, you know, whatever your connection with a Dharma inspiration is. Looking for ways that might infuse everyday activities. So in doing this kind of exploration, we might find that certain things that we do, I mean, it's useful to explore in our activities. Like maybe we can find ways to infuse the Dharma into what we're doing, but we may also discover that we're doing some things that are not exactly aligned with Dharma purpose. And so there's maybe being honest with ourselves about that. Can we let go of some of those things? And yet there's often I think a lot of this exploration is kind of a curiosity about what's the motivation? What is the purpose, the intention that we're engaging with when we do our actions? That's essentially what I was pointing to with the example in the grocery store, is connecting with a Dharma intention while engaging in that. So exploring our intentions, our motivations, is a part of this. Exploring what is the motivation behind doing something. Various activities, sometimes the same activity might be suitable given one set of motivations and not suitable given another set of motivations. And so it's really kind of an honesty of coming back. What is the motivation? Why am I engaged in this? In exploring this kind of practice, we are going to run up against the fact that we have a lot of mixed motivations. That often there is in engaging in an activity, some of it is going to be a connection with care and concern and love, and some of it's going to be wanting something in return, perhaps. you know, maybe offering something to somebody, but, you know, wanting them to like us in return, you know. So there's mixed motivations. In terms of actions that we do, it's useful to check in. Is this action, you know, to check in with the ethics side of it, the guidelines on non-harming. And if the action is non-harming, then coming into the motivation, looking at what's the motivation, why am I interested in doing this? And yet, if we are, we do see mixed motivations, and this is again part of the journey of our own minds, of seeing, you know, it's like we're not going to be able to only act out of skillful motivations until we are fully awakened. There's going to be greed in the mix. There's going to be aversion in the mix. And so we can't wait to take action until there's absolutely no greed in there. Often we have to engage even as we see we're angry or frustrated. And so to recognize that these unwholesome motivations exist, but also that there may be some sense of, even in that frustration or in that anger, whatever action that you're wanting to do there, there may also be some sense of wanting to take care of protecting someone or wanting to create safety for yourself or for others. And so there's mixed motivations in there. And so if you can, in seeing the mixed motivations, you know, be honest with yourself. Be honest with yourself that the unskillful motivations exist. And maybe you can also connect with the more skillful motivation. And perhaps using the just the moment of receiving in that moment that Gil spoke about this morning, just a moment of taking in what's responding with awareness in that moment may give us the opportunity to recognize that those mixed motivations. And maybe we can land a little bit more on the wholesome motivations, remembering our Dharma inspiration. And maybe that action can come with a little bit more of the wholesome. And the awareness of the unwholesome, too, may help us to have that action come out slightly differently. Come out with a little bit more wisdom, a little bit more compassion. So there's a way that we can, whatever we're doing, you know, the normal activities of our lives, it can be interesting to explore how to frame them as they relate to as they might be connected to the Dharma. This Nyanaponika Thera speaks to, it's not possible to always, especially in our non-retreat life, to always do what's most purposeful towards freedom, because we have to do our other activities. Like I, for a long time, needed to be a computer programmer and a technical writer. There was a period of time that I really resented that. I resented that this was not purposeful. I wanted to be meditating. I wanted to be practicing in the way that I thought practice would lead to freedom, or in whatever way I thought it was. And yet, what I began exploring was, okay, well, this is what I'm doing. How can the Dharma come into this? And aside from the whole, you know, bringing the mindfulness into the daily activities, which I was doing, you know, bringing my mindfulness into the going to work and being with people, being kind to people at work, all of that, I was exploring that. At a certain point, I got curious about, like, framing that whole activity of being a technical writer as supporting the Dharma. You know, initially I kind of resented it because I wanted to be studying the suttas and practicing and retreating. But at some point there was a kind of a recognition. This work that I'm doing is the whole way that I'm able to go on retreats. This is what's allowing me to have the nourishment, the sustenance. This is what allows me to buy my food, to have my shelter, to be able to travel to sit retreat. This is the support for practice. That completely shifted my relationship to work when I saw it as integral to what my purpose was. It was like a framing of the activity through the Dharma. And whatever the necessary things that we engage in, you know, maybe it's, you know, driving to work or something like that. You know, it's like that too, even that may be able to be framed in the perspective of the Dharma. You know, there you are on the freeway, and you know, in pre-coronavirus times, there was a community of people on the freeway at the same time. There we are, all in our individual cars, all stuck together in these traffic jams. It's a little sangha. You know, can we be kind together? You know, can I not close up the gap of the person in front of me? Let somebody have an easy merge when I see they've got their blinker on, you know, just like a lot that's a framing of that experience in the context of generosity. There's so many of our encounters with each other that can be framed in terms of kindness and generosity. At one point, I was having dinner with a friend, another Dharma teacher, and as we were paying the bill at the end, he said, "Have you ever thought about how this is providing, this is an act of generosity, it's providing a livelihood for the people who work here. It's an offering." And I hadn't thought about that. I thought of it as transactional as opposed to an offering. And again, this inspires the heart. The more we can see the ways that the Dharma infuses everything that we do, or can infuse everything that we do, it opens the heart. It brings joy and happiness and delight and nourishes those qualities as we engage with the conscious recognition, the conscious awareness of them. And so you might reflect on some of the things that you do often, your daily activities, the things that might not necessarily be directly connected to your highest aspiration, or you feel like it's maybe off to the side, something that you have to do in order to do something else that you more want to do. And for those things that you have to do, there is some way that you can find that connection and be inspired by the Dharma right within that. And notice how that affects your heart to do that, to remember your inspiration and aspiration while you're going to the grocery store, while you're chopping vegetables, a whole different way to be. Let's just sit for a few moments.